WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 11th of September, 2019. This morning, I'm going to go back to Bob Bailey. We have a couple of quarter hour episodes, and those will bookend Have Gun Will Travel, starring John Daner. So first go with episode 472 of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is titled The Confidential Matter. This original air date was the 10th of September, 1956. You're listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Mort Parkinson, Johnny. Eternity Mutual.
Oh, how are you, Mort?
I couldn't feel much worse.
It's the olives that do it, not the martinis.
I wish it were that simple. Can you come over to my office right away, Johnny?
Well, I guess so, if...
I don't often pull that confidential business, but I really would hesitate to go into this one on the phone.
Pretty rough, huh?
I'm afraid you're going to find it even worse than that. It's about Ed Morgan, Johnny.
Ed Morgan.
I'm sorry. I know he was a good friend of yours.
Well, he's one of the best I ever had. Ed was a great guy. It's too bad he had to die that way.
Johnny, it's too bad he didn't die a year sooner.
What?
You'd better come on over to the office.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the home office, Eternity Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the confidential matter. Item 1, $2.85. Taxi from my apartment to the Eternity Building in the 7th floor office of Mort Parkinson, Vice President and General Manager. It was a room I well remembered, with its blank walnut paneling and deep leather chairs. I'd worked on a lot of cases with Mort, and with the late Ed Morgan, too. And it sounded now as though Ed, my good friend from a long time back, was about to become a case himself.
Come in, Johnny. Pull up a chair.
Thanks, Mort. Well, that was quite a phone call.
It's quite a situation.
Yeah, I gathered that.
No, oh, I just can't talk sitting down. Old habit, I guess. Remember when we used to be over in the old Johnstone building before we built this new one? We had those old-fashioned stand-up desks. It was when old man Clement was still alive.
And before I was.
Hmm? Oh, yes. I guess I keep forgetting about you newcomers.
Meaning everybody who's come into the game within the last 40 years.
I suppose I am one of the original settlers. And set in my ways, too.
Yeah, well, what about
you? I sure hated to see those desks go. You could stand in front of them, lean an elbow on them, make out a report or a speech.
Mort, you're trying too hard to avoid it.
Avoid what?
You didn't call me over here just to reminisce about the old days.
In a way, maybe I did.
You know, it's funny. I always thought you liked Ed Morgan.
But I did.
Then why did you say it's too bad he didn't die a year sooner?
Because I liked him. Except like is too weak a word, actually. I thought as much of Ed as I would have of my own son if I'd had one. Well, I'm the one who hired him in the first place. Remember, Johnny?
Yeah, I remember.
And I took a personal interest in his career. Watched him work his way up. Till finally he was appointed chief adjuster for the West Coast, head of our San Francisco claims office. That was darn good for a man as young as he was. And I was proud of him, Johnny.
Yeah, I know. I know you were.
He was a hard worker, honest, dependable. And he had a good, sound future ahead of him. And then, just like that.
Accidents are usually just like that.
A foggy night, sharp curve, and he drove his car off a cliff into the Pacific Ocean. And that was that. Tragedy. Fini, the end.
Only it apparently wasn't the end, or you wouldn't have called me over here.
No, it wasn't, Johnny. I wish it had been.
Meaning?
You'd better brace yourself. Within 2 weeks after Ed Morgan's death, we started getting complaints from some of our clients.
What do you mean, complaints?
Old demands for adjustment on claims Ed had reported paid weeks before, requests for past due settlements, and so on.
Mort, I don't get it.
Neither did I. So I sent a company accountant out to San Francisco on the QT and put him to work on the claims files. And we found out, Johnny.
You found out what?
That Ed's accounts had been doctored for some time.
What?
Johnny, in the months before he was killed, he'd embezzled nearly $80,000.
Ed Morgan?
Ed Morgan.
I don't believe it.
He did it. You might as well accept the fact.
Anybody else, yes, anybody else. But not Ed. For one thing, money didn't mean that much to him.
I know. We were always joshing him about living like an old hermit instead of a young bachelor.
Well, then why would he do it, steal $80,000 after all these years of being honest? What would he want that would cost that much money?
That's exactly what I wish you'd find out.
Now, wait a second, Mort. Wait a second. This is one I don't want any part of.
Neither do I. But I'm afraid I'm stuck with it. And you are too, in a way.
Why?
Because Ed was your friend. Here's a flight ticket and reservation to San Francisco. Plane leaves in 2 hours.
No. I'd rather pass it, Mort.
Well, so would I. But we can't. Neither of us. There are too many questions left. And they've got to be answered.
Not by me.
$80,000 of the company's money is missing. I can't just write it off and forget it. It has to be accounted for.
There are other investigators, Mort.
And another thing that's just as important, to me at least, is to find out why he did it. It's a failure in human dynamics. A man like Ed, a man everybody respected and trusted, and he goes wrong. Why?
Get somebody else to find out.
I'd be pretty grateful if you'd do it, Johnny.
Mort, I just don't want any part of it.
I know how you feel. It's quite a shock to find out he was a crook. It's like somebody pulling the rug out from under you. So now you want to forget all about him. Leave him safely dead and buried.
Dead, Mort, but not buried. If you remember, they recovered the car, but not his body. It's still somewhere beneath the Pacific.
All right, then. Look at it from an efficiency standpoint, if nothing else. To any other investigator, Ed Morgan would be just a name, an unknown quantity. But you knew him.
I thought I did.
Regardless of what he did, Johnny, I just hate to think of a stranger pawing into his past. Maybe I still think back to the old times in the old country when the family buried their own dead.
I know.
And sometimes, Johnny, a friend has to go all the way. Even when the other person is goofed, isn't that what the younger generation calls it?
I'm not the younger generation, Mort. Right now, I'm older than Confucius.
I'd sure appreciate it, Johnny. And after all, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it. And like you said, Ed was my friend. All right, Mort, let's have the ticket. Item 2, $14.35, tips, taxi, and incidentals in Hartford and same in San Francisco. Plane trip between points paid from expense account of company manager and not included herewith. I went straight from the airport to Ed's last address when he was still alive, an apartment house in the Knob Hill section called the Drakeley Arms. And there's where I got my first surprise. Ed had always been the two-room bachelor walk-up type. But the Drakeley Arms consisted of equal parts of glitter, glass, swank, and price, including a uniformed doorman, a small private bar off the lobby, and an assistant manager with a gardenia on his lapel. Oh, he was a rare one, that manager. And it was a real gardenia.
I am, of course, most desirous of assisting you in every way possible, Mr. What did you say your name was?
Dollar. D-O-L-L.
I can spell dollar.
I'll bet you can.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, it's quite all right.
I didn't mean...
You didn't mean to be offensive, I understand. Now, about the former occupant of Suite 14.
Mr. Dollar, I'm terribly afraid.
Oh, please don't be.
I mean, there is simply very little I can tell you about the late Mr. Morgan.
A matter of discretion? Is that it?
Discretion?
A policy of the house? Something of that sort?
Well, we do, of course, try to protect the privacy of our residents. I'm sure you understand.
Even to the extent of turning down $20?
Well...
A curse one, isn't it?
Under the circumstances...
Nice likeness of Andrew Jackson, isn't it?
Thank you, sir. Gratuities of this nature are always so helpful in smoothing the rough pathway of human relations. Don't you think so, Mr. Dollar?
Definitely. It's already helping you remember my name.
Well, money is a mental stimulant, isn't it?
Don't call it money. Just think of it as item three.
I beg your pardon. Item...
That's quite all right.
I meant...
Yeah, I know. It's a kind of a habit I seem to be picking up. Now, has your memory been stimulated any in regard to Ed Morgan?
Oh, yes, the late Mr. Morgan. Pardon me, Mr. Dollar. Yes. Oh, yes, Countess Margie. Yes, I'll be delighted to send the boy up for 2 quarts of suds.
Suds?
Would a nice dry Bavarian ale be... Yes, Countess, just plain beer. Yes, Countess, right away. Frightful old lady. Mixes it with creme de menthe, you know. Now, where were we, Mr. Dollar?
We weren't, not yet.
Oh, yes, the late Mr. Morgan. Well, he'd been our guest, you understand, for about 6 months at the time of his, tragic accident.
What was he paying for his suite of rooms?
Oh, well, ordinarily, we don't release information of
that. Forget it. This is not ordinary. How much?
$1,200 a month.
I see.
Oh, he was a true gentleman, if I may say so. A bon vivant. And on the crassly materialistic side, if you'll forgive me, sir, a very free spender.
Sorry, 20's the limit.
Mr. Dollar, I was not trying to coerce your generosity by, well...
Putting on another bite?
Precisely.
All right. So Ed was bedded down in a Ming Line stall and was throwing money around like water. What else? Who came to see him? What sort of visitors did he have?
Well, none at all that I can recall.
None at all? He leased that overpriced cubicle and then just sat in it?
Well...
What about friends here in the building?
Well, most of our guests might be termed individually exclusive. Even eccentric in some cases. Except, of course, Mrs. Barrett.
Mrs. Barrett?
Yes. One of the loveliest guests we've ever had the pleasure of... Excuse me, Mr. Dollar. Yes. Yes, Countess Margie, the boy is on his way. I know, but he has to go clear down to the corner. Yeah. Well, please tell little Pim Pam that I'm so sorry. A dog drinks that stuff, too. Now, where were we?
About this Mrs. Barrett you mentioned.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, she and Mr. Morgan were inseparable, you understand. They were together constantly.
And Mr. Barrett?
Oh, there wasn't any. Well, not recently, I mean. Deceased. You know, dead.
Yeah, when?
Early this year, as I recall. I didn't know him, of course. Mrs. Barrett moved in here shortly after his death. Not until then.
And Ed Morgan, when did he move in?
About 6 weeks later.
Oh, he met her here, then?
Oh, no. No, they were already acquainted. Well acquainted.
I see.
In fact, I believe that Mr. Morgan and the young and very lovely widow met at the time of her husband's death, a matter of settling the estate or something of that sort.
It would figure all right.
I don't remember exactly why I thought so, but I do recall having an impression at the time that he moved in here only because of her. And as I say, they were together constantly right from the first.
That's all very interesting. I wonder if I could have a talk with this Mrs. Barrett.
That would be utterly impossible, I'm afraid.
Now look, if you think you can
I simply mean she isn't here.
Isn't here?
She's been gone for 10 days now.
Where'd she go?
I really haven't the slightest idea, Mr. Dollar.
Well, if she moved out, she must have left a forwarding address of some kind.
Well, she didn't move out. She still has her apartment here. She'll be back eventually, I imagine.
But at the moment,
I haven't heard a word from her since she left. Oh, poor dear. You know, one can understand why she'd want to get away for a while. Such a tragic coincidence, having two deaths of exactly the same... Oh, confound that woman.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by tragic coincidence?
Oh... Well, as I understand it, Mrs. Barrett's husband also died in some sort of accident. Yes, Countess.
Now, here is our star to tell you about tomorrow's episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow... The trail back into a man's past is a faint and twisting one. And at times it runs through quicksand. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thank you, lads. Yes, this is the confidential matter. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. Next, well, that was pretty interesting. Was it just me, or did he send that boy out to get beer? Suds. I guess the dog drinks, and I guess a $20 tip is just item three. Interesting, wouldn't you say? Next up, this is another radio drama that John Daner was involved in. It's one that I'm not particularly fond of because I didn't particularly care for the guy who played it on TV. If my memory is correct, Have Gun Will Travel debuted after the television show started, actually by a couple of years. Anyway, this is Have Gun Will Travel. This one's, excuse me, titled The Hanging Cross. This had an original air date, the 21st of December, 1958. So this would have been 2 years after John Daner had completed Frontier Gentleman. Yeah, good figure. All right, enough of this. I'll just Have Gun, We'll Travel. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur this morning on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford.
I've only seen a dozen real killers. But I've seen 10,000 people who will sit back and let murder happen. Which is the greater evil?
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of the man called Paladin.
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Paladin.
Good afternoon, Mr. Stanford. Pardon me.
Yes?
You dropped these by the desk.
Oh, thank you very much.
The glove that holds a lady's hand holds a world of prettiness.
Really?
Yes. My name is...
I'm not interested in your name. I don't wish to know it. I don't wish to know you. And if I did, this would not be the day, the hour, nor the place.
I quite understand.
Then if you'll kindly release my hand.
Oh, of course.
Again, thank you very much.
Oh, pretty lady, not too impressed with Mr. Paladin.
We are all entitled to mistakes, hey boy.
Oh, yes, but how often?
Seldom the time, the place, and the loved one all together.
And husband make three. Telegram come for you.
Oh.
Answer?
Yes, wire back, Have Gun, Will Travel.
Crime, delinquency, threats of war. These are the subjects that dominate our news headlines these days. Not very pleasant subjects, are they? You may say that somebody ought to do something about cutting down on crime and delinquency and in promoting peace among nations, but that there's nothing you personally can do about it. That's where you're wrong. You can wage your own fight against crime and delinquency in your own family by taking the family to the church or synagogue of your faith this week. The inspiration and guidance you and they will receive from spiritual contact will strengthen moral background and faith. Regular attendance at religious services will help your family to work out its own problems and give them comfort in facing the tensions of our present-day life. Worshipping together brings your family closer together, too. And supporting your own religious institution provides funds to help those individuals and families who, unlike you, are unable to help themselves. Find the strength for your life. Worship together this week.
In a way, I was sorry to leave San Francisco just as Christmas was coming on. The shop windows, already frosted, were filled with all those wonderful surprises, which seemed to appear only at the Christmas season. And there was an excitement in the eyes of passers-by, young and old alike. In the air, there was the smell of cookies and cakes and candies. It was a good time to be in San Francisco. And yet the telegram from Colorado Territory left me little choice. It was a long trip and a cold one. As I got closer to my destination, I heard more about the man named Beecher, the man who had hired me. And I didn't like what I heard. Matt Beecher was a hard man, and he ran his cattle empire with an iron fist. It was the day before Christmas when I arrived at the Beecher Ranch.
You got business here, cowboy?
I was told I'd find Matthew Beecher here.
You found him. I pay you $25 a month if I like your work. This is my foreman, Tater. He'll sign you on.
Howdy.
Now, I didn't come here to hire on as a hand, Mr. Beecher.
No? What did you come for, then?
My name is Paladin. You may remember this.
Have gun, will travel. So?
Well, you sent me a wire asking my help, something about your boy. As I understand it, he was carried off during the Sioux War 6 years ago.
Well, you're too late, mister. I got him back.
Just a few days ago, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, well, I'm glad everything worked out.
It has. Tater, ride him out to the stage trail. He's going to start back now.
And Mr. Beecher, it's a long trip from San Francisco. I'll take travel expenses for my trouble.
You'll get nothing. Put him off the ranch, Tater.
Mr. Beecher?
What?
Does the boy speak any English?
No, he don't. Why?
You speak any Indian dialect?
No.
Well, don't you want to talk to your son?
You speak the Pawnee dialect?
Some.
All right, Tater. Take him up to the main house. We'll talk about them expenses later.
Yes, sir. Come on, Mr. Paladin. Maybe I better set you straight about something.
What's that?
Well, we ain't too sure the boy is Matt Beecher's son.
Well, he seems sure enough.
Yeah, well, Matt's sure of everything. He found a boy riding off from a small band of Pawnees 3-4 days ago. Matt just says, "That's my boy," and takes him.
Huh. What do you think, Tater?
Well, he looks Indian to me. Of course, Robbie was only two when the Indians took him. That was when they killed Mrs. Beecher, too. And that nearly finished Matt off when they killed his wife.
Tater, is that you?
Yep. Mr. Paladin, this here's my wife, Morty.
Morty?
Mr. Paladin?
How's the boy today, Morty?
Same as yesterday and the day before.
Mm-hmm. Is he sick?
Well, not hardly. It's just we got to keep an eye on him every minute or he'll squirt away. Boy! Hey, boy! There he is, Mr. Paladin. About as wild as any animal that I've ever seen.
Poor little thing.
Well, what do you think?
Well, about 8 years old, I should think.
Be about right.
He could be white. But some of that grime were scraped off him. It's hard to say.
Hard to scrape it off, too.
Well, what's he say?
I haven't talked to him yet, Mr. Beecher.
Well, talk to him. I'm paying you.
Konolate shi. Shoshone kiburi kiman.
Shiwa. Kalate shoshone kiyo. Tekate.
His name is Chiwa. His father is Kalate, chief of the Pawnees.
You listen to me, boy. I'm your daddy. I'd sell my own soul. I'd give it away before I'd lose you again.
He don't understand you, Mr. Beecher.
Well, he's got to feel something this strong, lingo or no lingo. Now, boy, you listen to me. What's the matter with him?
He's afraid of you.
Mr. Beecher!
What do you want?
It's Indians, Mr. Beecher.
Indians.
Ponies.
Well, what about them?
Well, they're setting up camp.
Where?
They're over on the East Range.
So they finally come for the boy. All right, Tater.
Yes, sir.
Turn the men out. Make sure they all have rifles.
Yes, sir.
Now, wait a minute.
What?
Before you start shooting, why don't you find out for sure if this really is your boy?
I told you before, I know he's my boy.
You want to believe that, but you aren't sure.
All right, Paladin, say it out. What are you asking for?
Time to talk with those Pawnees.
Well, you go talk then, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. No matter what lies they give you, that boy's mine. And if they try to come after him, there'll be the bloodiest massacre you ever seen.
Thank you. Kent still turns best. Kent still turns best. It makes good sense when you smoke Kent. Kent still turns best. Of all of the brands of cigarettes, Kent tastes the best. Kent tastes the best. A richer taste than all the rest. Kent still turns best.
I rode out to the Pawnee camp knowing I had little time and less chance to stop a needless killing. There were squaws, braves, sitting, wandering. They were a hungry people and a lost people. At a tattered teepee, I found Kalete, chief of the Pawnees.
Kalete was once man who greeted white man like brother. Now he wanders, hungry, forgotten like the gray wolf.
I'm sorry. I wondered why Kalate was on this trail.
White man steal children.
Kalate will agree. A man may claim his own son.
Chiwa, my son.
Is he white?
Chiwa, my son.
I ask again, is he white?
Skin is leather bag God made to hold the soul. Color of bag, no matter. He was traded from the Sioux. Our blood has mixed.
But his is white.
He is my son. I take him back.
Kalate, if you take the boy, they'll be killing. This white man has many rifles.
Can rifles kill what has been killed already? Look at my camp. When there is no game, my people starve. We are driven from land and winter is here. But we move no more. We stay here. Soon we take my son.
Hello, Marty.
Hello, Mr. Paladin.
Wow, what's going on inside there?
Oh, everyone's shining up clean. We're going to celebrate Christmas, Mr. Beecher, too.
Mr. Beecher?
Well, I know you won't believe it, but Tater did the trick. Says to Mr. Beecher, maybe the boy will remember Christmas. Now, ain't that a good one? Indian boy bringing us Christmas, first time since Mr. Beecher lost his wife. Oh, gotta find some more mess heat for decorating. We're gonna have singing and eating and everything.
Sounds fine, Morty.
Well, Paladin, you see the chief?
I talked to him.
What did he say?
He's your son.
I told you he was. You tell them Injuns to get their squaws and their tents off my property?
No.
Why not? You want them all killed?
I want you to understand that Chief Kalate feels that the boy is his son, too, and he feels it very strongly. If you talk to him, I'd be glad to act as interpreter.
The only way I'll talk to him and his flea-bitten braves is with rifle fire.
Listen, Beecher. Chief Kalate is the only father the boy has ever known. You kill him. How are you going to explain that to the boy?
You speak Pawnee. You can explain it.
You're wrong, Mr. Beecher.
Yeah?
I couldn't explain that in any language.
Tater, I said rations, not all these fancy victuals.
Well, it's Christmas, Mr. Beecher.
Now, look. Listen to me, all of you. Listen. If one calf wanders off tonight, we work double tomorrow, even if it is Christmas Day.
All right, boys. The cider's sitting over there just awaiting.
You can't get no stouter, so you get to it. Hey, come on. Marty, what is it?
The boy's gone.
Gone?
They come and took him.
Was it the Pawnees took him?
Yes, sir.
You knew about this, Paladin.
I thought they'd try, but not so soon.
Get your rifles.
Now, just wait a minute. You're always reaching for a rifle. There's no need for rifles. No hurry. The Pawnees aren't going anywhere. They're tired of running.
Preaching from a gunslinger. You just been aching to speak a piece. Well, speak it, Paladin. Talk don't mean nothing. Say anything you want. I'll still have the last say.
Well, I'm far from being a preacher. But I do know something about killing. Now, these Indians, rightly or wrongly, believe the boy is theirs. And few people love children like the Pawnees. Now, the Chief Kalati might have given up the boy. He knows a wealthy rancher could give the boy more than a starving Indian could, and they're starving. Properly treated, he still might give up the boy. On the other hand, these Pawnees can't run anymore. They're tired. But they would rather die here tonight than give up the child to force. It won't be hard to massacre them. They have no guns. All you have to do is stay out of arrow range. And those you only wound, well, someone will have to press a muzzle against their heads and pull a trigger. Now, this is no Christmas message. I haven't even suggested that to a starving man, food may carry more weight than rifles. As Mr. Beecher can tell you, sentiments like peace, like goodwill, and love, and brotherhood, they're just words. Unless you already know what they mean. And if you don't, even if this were a chapel and I were a preacher, such words would do no good.
Well, I ain't got much to say. We're going out to kill some Injuns. One Injun in particular. Anybody that wants can stay here and draw his time. If you think you can find another job. And those who ain't going with me, speak up. Right now. Well, that's the story since the beginning, Mr. Paladin. The belly always wins out.
My dear Watson, with all due respect to Sherlock Holmes, let us establish one fact clearly. There is nothing elementary about the shrewd deductions Eric Severide makes as he analyzes world affairs on CBS Radio. As chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, Mr. Severide has opened to him almost every possible source of information. Experience has sharpened his perspective and given him an extraordinary working knowledge of the forces that make history. It's taught him to view each new development in terms of cause and effect. Each Monday through Friday night, as you join Eric Severide on most of these same stations, you'll find his news analysis remarkably free of snap judgments and predetermined conclusions. You'll discover, too, that his carefully considered appraisals of the news not only contain real clues as to what is going on in the world, but also they make the news as exciting as any Arthur Conan Doyle story.
As Beecher's men spilled out of the doorway of the main house to change clothes and get their rifles, I slipped out the back way and, taking the first horse I saw, headed for the Indian camp. Somehow, I had to keep Matt Beecher from starting a bloodbath he might not be able to stop. Even as Kalati and I talked, I knew there were horses moving in the darkness beyond the Indians' fires. Beecher's horses.
You are a wise man, my son. But we stay.
A man without a gun still might run.
No place to run. I have forgotten how to kill, but not how to die.
What good does it do the boy?
Could he take another father after this?
We got the camp surrounded. You want to explain that to the chief, Paladin?
He knows it.
You going to stand with them instead of with your own people? I asked you a question.
I heard you. Hold your fire, boys. That's Morty.
Women, what are they doing here?
Mr. Paladin!
Over here, Morty.
We've got food and things for them Indians. There's 15 or 20 of us. Is it all right to come in there?
It's the most all right thing in the world, Morty. Come on.
All right, ladies. Get your baskets. We'll get it.
What is?
Call your squaws, Chief. Call your children. Call the boy. They're bringing food and gifts for your people.
Shiva, Hulange, Hunemo.
Well, they don't look very friendly, Mr. Paladin.
I guess you don't look very friendly to them.
What do we say?
Oh, I'd suggest you try Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas?
To Christmas, Merry.
Morty, this is Kalate. He's the chief of the Pawnee.
How do you do?
Oh.
I only got one pair of hands. Here, you take this basket.
Hold on there, Morty. I'm with you.
Hello, Tater.
Hello, Mr. Paladin.
I come in too, Mr. Paladin.
Well, Pete.
Now, what Beecher's doing is wrong, and I don't care if I do get fired.
Well, look, Mr. Paladin, all the men are coming in.
Why, Morty, you ain't rightly dressed for riding.
Well, ladies, none of us have time to change, but you sure don't have to.
Well, Chief, there'll be no bloodletting tonight.
Christmas.
That's right. They call it Christmas. It's a time of the year when people pretend there is no evil in the world.
Yeah, I like.
Everybody likes. What about the boy, Chief? His name is Robbie Beecher. His skin is white. Chief?
My boy.
His boy, Chief. You can return the seed to the plant that bore it. He can't take it, nor can I, nor can anyone.
I talk to boy.
I'll talk to his father.
Hold it, Paladin. Right there.
He'll give you the boy, Beecher.
What?
You can take him home tonight. The chief is talking to him now, telling him that you're his father.
I'll kill you, Paladin, if this is some kind of way of getting back at me. When do I get my boy?
I haven't been paid yet. $1,000 cash.
Well, I haven't got it with me.
When can you have it?
Tomorrow.
Then give it to the chief so he can buy some land for himself and his people.
I'll do better than that. I'll give him some land. I feel like I should give something.
It's a good feeling, isn't it?
As a matter of fact, it is.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Beecher.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Paladin.
Good
afternoon, hey boy.
When you come back?
Last night, late. Excuse me.
Oh, no. Wait, not her. You met her once, remember?
I remember. She's always dropping her glove.
Oh, too bad. I eat trouble. Oh.
I beg your pardon. You dropped your glove.
Oh, so I did.
May I pick it up?
You may.
Thank you. Allow me to introduce myself?
Well, please do.
My name is Paladin.
My name is Eugenie Meyer, Mr. Paladin.
Oh. There's a princess named Eugenie.
I'd rather hear about that glove that holds a lady's hand.
Holds a world of prettiness?
Yes. I like that beginning better. Is there more?
Oh, there's a great deal more, I assure you. But one question, why the change of heart?
Well, it's more a change of mind. The change of heart can come later.
But why? You were very confident in your rejection the last time we met.
Well, you were very confident of yourself, Mr. Paladin. Christmas seems to have humbled you and me.
Then we're both very fortunate. Now we can meet.
Yes.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe.
is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars John Daner as Paladin with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Gene Roddenberry and adapted for radio by John Dawson. Featured in the cast were Vic Perrin, Jess Kirkpatrick, Roy Woods, Richard Beals, Ann Morrison, and Virginia Christine. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
Yeah, probably won't be joining that next week. That was, as you heard, Have Gun, Will Travel. Hanging Cross was the title of that one. An original air date, the 21st of December, 1958. It was actually episode 5 of the actual totality of Have Gun, Will Travel, starring John Daner. What westerns did he not participate in? I'm surprised Norm MacDonald actually had a hand in that one. Founder of, creator of Gunsmoke in Fort Laramie. It wasn't John Daner in Fort Laramie. But actually, John Daner did the first Frontier Gentleman. Fort Laramie before they got Raymond Burr. Enough bantering about this. We're going to have to fulfill an FCC obligation here.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. And this is Arthur. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM, WMFO, and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. To conclude this morning's show, we're going to follow up what I played at the top of the hour. Episode 2 of The Confidential Matter. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey. Interestingly enough, and this is purely coincidental, that this second episode, its original air date was the 11th of September, 1958. I just realized that last night because I had picked the show a couple weeks ago that I was going to do The Confidential Matter. I just noticed last night, because I know coming up after the Grand Hour, there's going to be a special 9/11 show with Edward Buchard. So let me just get going here with you. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and The Confidential Matter, Episode 2. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Mac Woodson, Mr. Dollar. The girl from the claims office called and gave me this number.
Oh, yes, Mr. Woodson. It seems we're working on the same case for the same company.
Well, I've been working on Mr. Ed Morgan's files and records here for the past week now. I've turned up some...
How much is missing?
Well, about $80,000 so far. All of it was taken during the 4 months immediately preceding his death. I'll say one thing. In 20 years as an accountant, I've never seen a looting more cleverly carried out.
Oh, Ed was a very bright lad. A man who'd go far, they all said.
Did you know him, Mr. Dollar?
I thought I did. He was one of my best friends. But it turns out I'm only beginning to know him. Could you meet me in his office around 10 o'clock, Mr. Woodson?
Yes, that's where I am now. I've been working on these books day and night.
Better be careful. That's what got Ed into trouble.
How's that?
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Eternity Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the confidential matter. Location, San Francisco. Expense account continued. Item 4, $1, one martini. Item 5, $1, one tip to the bartender who stirred the martini. All in the house that Jack built. I don't know who built it, actually, but it took Jack to live in it. $1,200 a month, to be exact. That was the take-home bite for an apartment at the Drakely Arms on Nob Hill. And, of course, that didn't include drinks in the intimate little private bar just off the lobby. And this is where Ed Morgan had lived during the last 5 months of his life, until he missed a curve one night and drove his car off a cliff into the Pacific. Ed Morgan, whose idea of a big night had always been his pipe, slippers, and a mystery novel. But things were different when I'd known him and been his friend. For one thing, he hadn't stolen $80,000. Or I don't think he had.
Do you find the martini adequate to your expectations, sir?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, indeed. It's a heck of a belt for a buck.
Thank you, sir.
Quite a nice little place you got here.
Oh, I find it a most agreeable sanctuary from the stress and strife and the hurly-burly of the city.
Been here long?
I have tended bar here in the Drakely Arms Rendezvous for some 2 years now.
Oh, well, then you may have known a friend of mine who had an apartment here up until a month ago. Mr. Edward Morgan?
Oh, yes. Mr. Morgan was a regular customer here. An eager supplicant for my humble and healing wares.
A beer drinker, mostly, as I recall.
The Rendezvous does not serve beer, sir.
Oh, forgive me. I didn't know.
Quite all right, sir. Yes, I was here before Mr. Morgan moved in, and here I am still, now that he is no longer with us. Such is the chance and mystery of life.
One just never knows.
Precisely. Oh, could I say...
Not yet, thanks. Get to know Ed pretty well, did you?
The policy of the Drakely Arms, sir, is to maintain a certain degree of formality in relations between guests and personnel.
Sort of like a zoo, you might say, with bars to separate the people from the animals.
The comparison is quite apt.
Somehow, I can't see Ed Morgan sacking in a marble squirrel cage like this joint.
I confess, he hardly seemed the type to me, sir. He was much too unrestrained for the Drakely.
He came in here a lot, did he?
Almost nightly. For a few minutes, at least, on his way to some gala night spot.
Gala night spot, Ed Morgan?
Oh, yes.
In all the years I knew Ed, I was only able to drag him into a gala night spot once. He stayed 20 minutes, then left because his tie was choking.
Are you quite certain that your friend was the same Ed Morgan?
I wish I weren't. Who were his friends? Did he always come in alone?
Oh, no. No, never alone, sir. He and Nikki were inseparable.
Nikki?
Oh, I should say, of course, Mrs. Barrett.
Oh, a young widow, as I remember. Lives here in the building.
A lovely girl. Fascinating.
And also unrestrained?
Definitely.
And Ed, then, was one of her friends.
Oh, they were together every night, sir. An hour here in our little establishment, a few champagne cocktails, then out to dinner, dancing, the opera, ballet.
Ed Morgan?
Oh, quite. Life was just a mad whirl for those two. I gather your friend was something of a wealthy playboy.
He was a claims adjuster for an insurance company.
How could he possibly live in the fashion he did?
If I told you, you'd flip.
I beg your pardon?
Tell me something. Was Ed in here on the night he was killed?
Oh, yes. He left here about 9, as I recall. And a few hours later, he was dead.
How did this Nikki take it? Pretty broken up, was she?
She is a woman of very strong character.
Oh, in other words, she didn't bat an eye.
Look,
that night Ed was killed, did he leave here alone?
No, sir.
He was alone when he went off the cliff.
Not when he left here, though. Nikki was with him.
Item 6, $2.40, taxi to the Telegraph Hill apartment of Lisa Duval. Lisa had been Ed Morgan's secretary for about 4 years. But it seemed Miss Mousy business at the office was Miss North Beach Bohemia at home. Italian slacks and halter. Cushions on the floor. And naturally, a view of the Bay Bridge from a corner window. We sat on the floor, naturally, and drank Chianti from a half-gallon jug, while a record player moaned agonizedly under the gouging of its needle. Bartok, I gathered, was now last year's kick. This was progressive jazz.
Maybe it seems a little affected to you, Mr. Dollar, the way I dress and live in private life, as you might say.
Why so? Everybody's got a right to salt his own dish of porridge the way he likes it.
Well, I've done this deliberately, I guess, as a sort of antidote for the insurance business.
Oh, has it been that bad?
Not bad. Boring. Oh, not your end of it, of course. Investigation work must be exciting.
Yeah, scream a minute, day and night.
But just keeping records, filing papers week after week. I used to stare out of the office window at the ships in the harbor and think about stowing away on one. But, of course, I didn't have the nerve.
Too bad. The cruise would have been delirious.
I thought of quitting several times. I guess I stayed because of Ed, Mr. Morgan.
Oh?
He was always so wonderful to work for. So lenient and understanding. Up until the last few months, at least.
What about those last few months, Lisa? What came over him?
I don't know. He was different, that's all. As though he were tense and nervous, under pressure.
Any idea where the pressures came from?
He didn't confide in me, Mr. Dollar.
What were your personal relations between the two of you during the years you worked for him?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, were you friendly, formal, strictly business?
Friendly, I think, would cover it best.
Did you see each other outside of office hours?
Occasionally.
I notice one of his pipes there in the bookcase.
He'd come here sometimes in the evening, and we'd listen to music and talk. Up until the...
Until the last few months?
It wasn't that we stopped being friends, Mr. Dollar. He was just different, that's all.
Tense, under pressure.
That's about the only way I can describe it.
But you don't know why he was that way.
Well, looking back, I suppose it was because of the money. If he really did take it. I just can't believe it. Ed wasn't that kind of a man. He was gentle and honest, at least until...
Until the last few months?
Yes.
Or were you going to say, until she came along?
How did you...
Lisa.
Yes.
How long have you been in love with Ed?
Ever since I started to work for him. But he never knew it. He couldn't even see me.
I'm sorry, Lisa.
I'm sorry for you too, Mr. Dollar. I know how close you and Ed were, and I know how you must feel being called in and having...
Forget it. It's a job, that's all.
Sure, just a job. So is major surgery.
This woman he was going around with, Nikki Barrett, did you ever meet her?
I met her.
What did you think?
What's the difference? I was prejudiced.
I'll allow for that.
In the old days, they used to believe in witches, vampires. Some of them were very beautiful, and they'd lure a man on, and then destroy him.
And you think she did something like that to Ed?
Oh, you weren't out this way during the time he knew her. You weren't around him to see how he changed.
No. Oddly enough, the one time I was through here about 3 months ago, Ed was unexpectedly called away on business.
He wasn't called away. He was avoiding you. He knew he was getting in too deep.
How'd he meet her?
She came to the office with a life insurance claim. $50,000. Her husband had just died. I knew her type from the minute she walked in. The grieving widow, all in black, and looking like a Powers model. And he just melted down and laid his head under her foot. That was the start of it.
Why'd she come to him? Unless she had a disputed claim.
It was a double indemnity clause. Her husband had been killed in an accident.
Her husband too, huh?
What do you mean?
Ed Morgan died in an accident. Remember? Item 7, $1.15, taxi from Lisa's apartment to the Deckman building on Montgomery Street. It was after 10 and the financial district was nearly deserted. The canyons between the tall buildings were hollow and empty. A cold wind was blowing off the bay. Or maybe it was blowing out of the past. An old, old past, dead and far away. The pattern was beginning to look familiar. Too familiar. Lord, the woman gave me the forbidden apple to eat. Ed, too, it seemed. The same old wine, the same old dodge. And yet there was something not quite right about that pattern.
The cotton runs into some funny ones, Mr. Dollar. This Morgan case here is one of them.
How do you mean, Mr. Woodson?
Well, the way he was going about it, for one thing. Running hog wild, as you might say. Of course, as I said on the phone, his general scheme was pretty clever. He certainly knew standard procedures.
Well, he'd been with the company a long time.
Well, now, these payoff checks on claims. Of course, they were sent out from Hartford in care of this office. So what Morgan did was open a disbursement account in the bank here, then sign and deposit the checks and draw out the money in cash chargeable to direct disbursement funds under his own name.
Mr. Woodson.
Now, of course, the canceled checks would return to Hartford, but since they were countersigned to disbursement, they wouldn't even be processed. Instead, they'd be returned to Morgan. So, you see, there'd be no evidence
Look,
in Hartford.
Mr. Woodson, I'll accept the fact that Ed was clever. But what did you mean there was something funny in the way he was going about it?
Well, he must have known it couldn't last. It was a good scheme for a short time, but it carried the seeds of its own destruction.
In what way?
Complaints. Some of these claims are 4 months old, and legitimate claims. Morgan couldn't stall these people off forever.
Oh, I see.
Only other embezzlement case I've worked on that was similar was a man who worked a quick swindle for a blackmail payoff. He knew he'd probably get caught, but he just had to take the chance.
Yeah, you may have stumbled onto something, Mr. Woodson.
Oh, is that so? You mean it ties in with that file folder you've been studying there?
Oh, I don't know. It's an investigation report on an accidental death happened about a year ago. Ed Morgan handled the insurance claim and got to know the widow. He'd been running around with her for several months just before his death.
I don't quite see the of course. Mr. Morgan also died in an accident.
Unless he was murdered.
Now, here is our star to tell you about tomorrow's episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, $80,000 and a beautiful girl, both missing. Then one of the two is found and a bombshell explodes. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting...
That was yours truly, Johnny Dollar, The Confidential Matter, an original air date of September 11th, 1956. Again, that was by coincidence. I picked that, which is kind of interesting. Coming up next, got Edward. If you haven't had your coffee, Edward will wake you up. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and...
A 9/11 Memorial Show. Some of the scariest audio clips I've ever heard. These eyewitnesses appear around the cockpit recording for the pilot flight that night.
Really?
Yes, that
I can't call in sick.
We've got the archive. Just go to WMFO.org.
Yeah, I can't call in sick. Dead air, huh? Thanks for listening. I'm glad I don't have to put you on automation.